You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 161 by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Artistic Sensitivity as a Spiritual Approach to Knowing Life and the World, translated by Rory Bradley. This is 13 lectures. This is Lecture 10, given in Dornach on April 2, 1915. Churches call their parishioners together throughout the year with a ringing of bells. Bells ringing mark the time. They are important announcements of time, and they also mark the times when the parishioners are called to the church. This significant sound of ringing bells is stopped among certain church communities during the period that begins with Good Friday, commemorating the death of Christ, and the bells are not rung again until Resurrection Day, the festival celebrating the resurrection of the power that we have often spoken of in our spiritual scientific remarks as the power that gives the earth meaning. The significance of this intervening time lies in the remembrance of the fact that the power that gave meaning to earth evolution has been reunited through sacrificial death with the depths of being. This time is denoted by the dissonant tones of the wooden instruments that are used instead of bells to mark the passage of time. The ringing of the bells again on Resurrection Sunday is meant to signal that the music of the bells has been blessed and made meaningful by the presence of this meaning on earth, and that these bells marking the passage of time will then continue to ring for all believers throughout the Christ-filled year. We have tried in many different ways to approach the meaning and essence of the power that flowed into the impulses of earth evolution through the mystery of Golgotha. You will have seen from the various remarks made that every path the soul might take toward this power is but one of many, and all of them only partially evoke the sensibilities and feelings that allow you properly to take hold of all that should be revealed when you speak the name of Christ or speak of the mystery of Golgotha. Today we will once again select one of those many paths. Again, it will be but one of many, for only by venturing down many of these paths that lead to the mystery of Golgotha can you arrive at an understanding suitable to the particular age in which you have incarnated. The path chosen today is one that will present to our souls the manner in which certain peoples who knew nothing of the mystery of Golgotha, the peoples of early Europe, had to take up that mystery after having made preparations for it in their hearts and souls. In several of the earlier lectures, I indicated that a tragic feeling for nature was connected with Northern European evolution during a particular period of time. This tragic feeling was radically different from the feeling for nature that originated in Christianity and spread throughout Southern Europe during the first Christian centuries. The feeling for nature from Greek and Roman culture was, to a certain extent, connected with a kind of retreat from nature, a pulling back from the natural world. In these southern countries where Christianity spread in Greek and Roman culture, the concepts of sin and guilt were inwardly and intimately connected with the things that people felt flowed into the human soul from the natural world. Quote, retreat from nature into the climes of spiritual life, the climes from which Christ descended for the salvation of humanity, to bring meaning to the earth. Free yourself from all that is purely natural within the human being, and turn toward that which can heal, that which can save you from the sins of nature. Close quote. These are the kinds of phrases that came in southern Europe out of that early Christian feeling for the natural world. The Celtic Germanic population was ensouled with an entirely different feeling for the natural world when they took up Christianity. It was impossible for them to simply flee from nature or connect it with the concepts of sin and shame. Over the course of many long centuries, the natural world had become far too important to the European populations to allow them to simply abandon it. They had grown together so intimately with the natural world that by the time they took up Christianity, although it was possible for them to turn toward a world other than the world of nature, they could not bring themselves to just say, quote, away from nature, close quote. This call away from nature, this looking and striving toward the fields of the mind, caused them great pain and sorrow in the soul. It caused them great distress, because in the background of all the wonders of the heavenly realm, there was a sorrow about all that had to be lost in the natural realm. And if you were to ask why such a feeling was there in the soul, you would find that the connection between these souls and the natural world still echoed within them from a not too distant past, a past that was much closer to them than it was for the Eastern or Southern European populations. It was as though something of that holy sense of well-being, which accompanies a connection with the natural world and with God in the natural world, still lived in their hearts and souls. The sorrow, the pain, the mourning come from the feeling that a necessity, a prior world necessity, had caused the abandonment of what had once connected people with the holy element, the divine in the natural world. It was not merely a feeling that the natural world is being punished by sin and guilt. Rather, it was the feeling that in losing the natural world, something once infinitely worthy had been lost. It was not just the feeling that people were supposed to turn away from the natural world. It was, rather, much more the tragic feeling that something holy in the natural world had also turned away from the human heart and soul. And that now, what people had once honored in their connection with the natural world was to be experienced through the elevation of the mystery of Golgotha. This feeling was far more real and also infinitely more tragic when Christianity took hold in these regions than was the case in the regions south of the Alps and in the East. There is no better way to become clear about the meaning of the old sensibility for the natural world than by turning your eye, EYE, toward what might be counted as a kind of anticipatory sense of Christ's sacrificial death in the European populations, by turning your eye toward the significance of Baldur's death and displacement to the underworld, to the world of Hel, to Niflheim. I have often indicated that in our time, it is difficult to call up into your soul everything that was once connected with the myth of Baldur, with the myth of this unique ancient sun god who was honored and worshipped by the peoples of northern Europe. And it is indeed difficult to make this clear in a time when people believe that the human soul, at a particular point in human evolution, has always appeared and experienced things in the same way that it appears and experiences things at this moment. We must instead convince ourselves of the thought that in ancient times the human soul was capable of having entirely different experiences than the ones it is capable of having in later periods, and that all of this is connected with a whole experience of natural existence. Just imagine for a moment that the human soul once looked out into the natural world through the human eye, EYE, in an entirely different way than it currently looks out into the natural world through the current human eye, and that it once listened to the natural world through the human ear in an entirely different way than it currently listens to the natural world through the current human ear. And become clear about the transition by selecting a comparison that, even if it seems a bit radical, can nevertheless make the difference very clear. Now, you look out into the natural world through your eyes. You see the green of the plants, the green-blue of the forests, the blue of the heavens, the colorful variegation of the flower beds. Now imagine that a revolution in human existence on earth were to occur because of some prior necessity, so that people suddenly lose their ability to see colors. And now the entire natural world would appear to be nothing but gray upon gray. And when you look at the heavens, you would see nothing but a different shade of gray than when you look at the gray meadows. And you would see nothing but different nuances of gray, black, and white when you look at the colorful beds of flowers. If you imagine such a revolution in the human perception of the visible natural world, you would have some sense of the sort of thing that actually happened during the period when the possibility was lost for people to look out across the meadows and see all of the many different elemental beings connected with the growing, intermingling, and essence of the flowers and blossoms. Because of a pronounced revolution in the ability to look at the natural world, the possibility was lost to look up at the stars and see the living spiritual beings of the planets intermingling with the stars in the ether. I have often indicated that it is one of the most untrue sentiments that people express when they say that nature makes no leaps. This saying is not true. Just as it is a great leap for the plant to transition from the green leaf to the petal of a blossom, so too it was a great leap in human evolution as we moved from ancient clairvoyance, when people saw the elementals moving and living there in the world, to the current form of seeing, in which we simply see the colorful bed of flowers spread out before us. What a tremendous leap! And the people who made up the peoples of Europe, during the time that coincided with the period in which the mystery of Golgotha had already taken place in the East, those people still had a living sense that this older form of seeing was once there, that their forefathers had lived under conditions in which they could see the living beings in the meadows and the woods and in the infinite expanse of the heavens. And they had the feeling that all of that had vanished, dried up and died out. They had a feeling that when earlier people turned their eyes toward the moon at night, this moon did not appear to them merely in the form of the bright sickle, but that this bright sickle was surrounded by living spiritual planetary beings that said much to the human soul, and that this ability was then lost in the periods in which they had to live. When those souls asked themselves what had happened to cause the natural world to be so emptied of the divine, to spread such darkness in places where there once had been spiritual light, the person who led these people said that once in the world of the gods there was one named Baldur, in whom the force of sunlight had been drawn together. But because of the dark's hatred, Baldur had to abandon the field of vision that he had spread out across humanity's earth horizon in order to go to hell in the underworld. The visionary power of ancient times vanished. The bright sunlight has gone down. The bright light of the ancient gods has set. and the dead shine of sunlight is now reflected only through the light of the moon sickle. The world has become materialistic. The natural world for which people mourn and feel sorrow, the natural world that people now want to fill solely with the concepts of sin and shame, appears to be what was left behind, what was once unified with the divine and once sent the echoes of the divine to human souls. Thus the feeling that one might have about the death song of the ancient sun god Baldur was activated. He is no longer out there, surrounding our powers of vision. He has withdrawn to the underworld, leaving behind the mourning natural world to us. But where has he gone? Where in reality is this realm of Hel, that realm of darkness to which Baldur has withdrawn? Where is he? I would say that our materialistic age will be able to prepare itself for such sensibilities only when it adopts the concepts mentioned here. Let us ask ourselves what it meant in ancient times when people, turning to the natural world, said to themselves, "Baldur is there." What did that mean? This meant something truly real, something you cannot understand if you believe that the formation of the human constitution was always the same as it is today. Then, a person in ancient times went outside and perceived things in the meadow. He could not always do it, but only at certain times. But because he could sometimes do it, he knew that it was possible that those living, elemental beings that I spoke about were there. What was it like when that person was indeed able to see those elemental beings? It was not merely an act of looking. It was not the dead capturing of a sight. But rather it was connected with a living feeling, with a living perception. A person walked through the wood and looked at the spirits, the elemental beings. But he did not merely look at them. I would say that he drank in their being with his soul. He felt their skin as a refreshing soul-spiritual drink. He felt the breath that emanated from the elemental beings in the woods and the meadows penetrating into him through the etheric body. They make a body young. One might have that feeling, going out in the morning when the remains of the dawn make the elementals of the wood and meadows visible. They make a body young. They give it strength, and this power endures within you. You were really there when the elemental, natural world made you young. You were truly present. But then, what happened to all of these forces that kept the body young? They vanished from the external world, and you could only have a sad, half-conscious connection with them. Where did they go? They continued to be active, but they were active only in unseen and unheard places, as it were. They were active, but they acted upon human nature in a way that humanity was no longer conscious of. And then came a time when, as people became aware of these forces, they had to say to themselves, quote, "There are forces at work within me that I once had the power to see, and whose influence on the external world I could notice and perceive. But now I can know only that they act upon me in a dark and unseen place." Close quote. The god Baldur had been inserted in the realm of Hel, into the darkness within the human being itself, into the underground places of the human soul. Where is Baldur? The priests who had to explain the secret to people who asked this question, "Where is Baldur?" had to say, quote, "Baldur is not in the visible world. As a human being, you need creative powers. The creative powers that kept the body young. Powers that you were once allowed to absorb half-consciously. Those powers are now active within you, completely without your knowing it. And in such a way that you can derive nothing from them through your knowledge. Because you need these forces in those invisible places, Baldur has vanished from the visible realm and retreated to the world of your unconscious interior. Close quote. This caused humanity to feel something that can be expressed in this way. Quote, as a human being, one part of me stands in the realm of hell. I cannot see how the creative powers of my life reach out from that realm and take hold in my soul body. The god Baldur is in the underworld, in hell, and he works in invisible ways upon me. The old sun clairvoyance of Baldur's realm has set and passed. Close quote. This mood of mourning, sorrow, and pain is one that the soul may call forth, for it is not an irrelevant, egotistical human sorrow. It is a sense of mourning that the human being feels in connection with the cosmos. It is cosmic mourning, cosmic sorrow, and cosmic pain. And then tidings came that what had retreated into the realm of hell had been reanimated by another power, a power that you can rediscover through deep insight into your own interior, the place to which the ancient power of Baldur had vanished. Baldur is in the realm of hell, but Christ has descended into that very realm, into the realm of humanity's own subconscious essence. There he revives Baldur. And if we human beings have sufficiently immersed ourselves in precisely what humanity has become throughout the course of Earth evolution, then we rediscover the creative powers that kept humanity young. You will find again what you have lost, for the ancient Baldur has descended into your own realm of darkness. There, the Christ has found him, and he has revived the very thing that Baldur and his power once were to you. This is what the priests could proclaim to those among the peoples in that region who truly felt the deep secret brought by the message of the mystery of Golgotha. The Easter message appeared like a holy memory of very ancient, holy ages. But it was also a memory that simultaneously offered new life. Still, every person had to realize, quote, the power of the ancient Baldur was too little to last for the whole of human evolution. A higher power had to enter to give back to humanity what it had to lose, what only Baldur had. Close quote. As the tidings of Christ resounded in the memory of the ancient Baldur and his death, the resurrection of ancient power resounded within the human soul, into which that power had descended through Baldur's death, a power that was now newly awakened. To approach the meaning of the mystery of Golgotha for Earth evolution, we must ask ourselves what the feelings and sensibilities were with which humanity encountered Christ during his lifetime. It is not a matter of coming to an abstract concept of the being of Christ or the mystery of Golgotha. Rather, it is a matter of being able to answer the following question for ourselves. Quote, what can the impulse that ran through the mystery of Golgotha animate in the deepest depths of the human soul? Close quote. Let us take a look at this mystery of Golgotha and how it was celebrated by the various religious denominations of the old world. On Good Friday, the burial of Christ was celebrated. The bells went mute, and silence spread across the earth. A person who was alive during the centuries that I am speaking of would have thought, quote, the world has become silent. There are no sounds or tones. The Christ has descended into the parts of the soul to which Baldur had to descend, because Baldur's power was not enough to sufficiently elevate the human soul. Christ is down below, down in the mysterious depths where I also stand, when I look upon the unconscious creative powers within me. Close quote. The human heart can mystically see through all of this when it meditates on the following. The impulse of Golgotha has left this silent world. It resides below, where you are as well. Wait. Wait, and this impulse from Golgotha will unite with Baldur in the spiritual worlds to which your soul will also belong, if only it follows the paths that lead into your own underground places. During these Easter days, this impulse will reanimate Baldur. And within yourself, O human being, you will discover what declined and vanished from the world that surrounds you when Baldur disappeared into the depths of your interior. Take up, O human being, the living concept of Christ that entered through the mystery of Golgotha. It will arise again within your soul, not before your external eye, as the elemental power, the soul-enlivening creative power. So long as you become properly conscious of your interior life in the light of the moon, far from the sun. Wait, wait until it arises, the one who will revive Baldur. Once you had a world. In this world, you needed only to direct your senses toward the natural world that surrounded you. And the enlivening, ensouling power of the elementals in that natural world flowed toward you without any action on your part. A realm of spirit was woven through all of natural existence, and simply by waiting for a proper glimpse of your surroundings, you lived in a natural world that was not without spirit. You lived in what lives behind the natural world. You lived in the very existence of nature. Now you no longer find the spirit in the natural world. You must seek it through a deep re-enlivening of your own interior life, with the power that entered through the mystery of Golgotha. Nature, you were once expressive, so expressive that humanity's true and genuine home appeared in your forms. This is something that Baldur took with him. It is no longer there in nature, but is instead to be found in regions that you cannot see with your external eye. But this old realm, whose expression and forms once comprised the surrounding natural world, still exists. You will not find it if you simply walk the path of nature alone. You will find it if you connect with the impulse that entered through the mystery of Golgotha. The natural world is not something sinful and guilty. It has been abandoned. Abandoned by the sense of home that must be sought by those filled with the power of Christ. You might notice that you can still hear echoes in these Christian times of what ancient peoples took into their memory from the death of Baldur. And you might see that they used these echoes to connect Baldur's death with the tidings of the mystery of Golgotha. These echoes can be heard once the tone of sorrow and mourning for the natural world, which I just described, has gradually faded out and died away. To be sure, the demeanor that looks solely toward Christ and his sacrifice, solely toward that heavenly home, this attitude fills the Christian worldview. And so among the peoples of Europe, another attitude became gradually more distinct. An attitude that saw the natural world not as an abandoned child, but as the lesser child, so to speak. But if you listen not only to the meaning of the words, but also to the way in which the words were used, as the tidings of the mystery of Golgotha spread across Europe in the 8th and 9th centuries, if you hearken to the way in which people were speaking about the fact that the true home of the human soul was not to be found in the earthly world, you can still sense something of that ancient tragic mood about a natural world deprived of Baldur. As I said, you simply need to listen, not to the words and their abstract meaning, but to the way in which these feelings about the natural home and about this other home for the human soul resound within the words. if you simply listen through to the feelings within the tidings of the mystery of Golgotha in the 8th and 9th centuries. You will see that such echoes existed even after Christianity had spread, even after there were people seeking to spread Christianity in the form that had been taken up in the East. We have religious texts from this period that were composed to some extent by Europeans, and one of these European religious texts is the so-called title Harmony of the Gospels by Ottfried, a monk who lived in Elsass. He learned the mysteries of Christianity from Rabanus Maurus, and then sought to put what he felt to be the significance of the Gospels, the message of the death and resurrection of Christ, into his native language. Ottfried was born in Weissenberg in Elsass. He translated what he felt to be the significance of the Gospels, what he felt and perceived about the Gospels, into a language that was spoken at the time in Elsass. Readers aside, this is not the A-L-S-A-C-E, Alsace, but Elsass, E-L-S-A-S-S. End of readers aside. Let us listen to a few lines of particular interest from these Christ tidings by this Elsass monk from the 9th century. And let us attempt to listen, not to the abstract sense of the words, but rather listen through to hear the sadness felt for the abandoned home that humans once had in the natural world. To that end, I will first read to you the lines in the original language, and then translate them into a more modern language, insofar as that is possible. Readers aside, I have tried to read this. I cannot do it. I don't know what it's in or how it sounds. My apologies. So I'm just going to go directly to the translation. End of readers aside. Let us now try to offer this as close as possible in modern language. Quote, "We feel suffering and pain for much that was dear to us, and tolerate bitter times here, now. Now we are mourning with our pain here in the country." Steiner says he means the country of the earth. Back to the quote. "In many different groupings because of our sin. Work," Steiner again, "in earlier languages, work meant something more like troubles or toils," back to the quote, "whose many labors are now visited upon us. We can know nothing of home, we who are destined for sorrow and abandoned. Woe, you foreign land! Oh, how hard you are!" Steiner, thus he speaks to earth. Quote again, "You are truly heavy. I say that to you everywhere. Weighed down with worries, ever shifting, are those who are without their home. I have felt it in me. Never have I felt something dear in you. Never have I found in you any other possessions than a pure sense for mourning, a heart full of sorrows, and a variety of great pains." Close quote, Steiner again. And so from the soul of that monk, we hear what was felt at the time toward the natural world. And over and against this feeling, there was a sense of the power that had entered through the mystery of Golgotha. It is very hard nowadays to revive a sense of how the great periods of celebration were elevated above everyday life in those times, when people still had a more living sense of what was being commemorated as Balder's death, and of what had once more been taken up through the power that entered through the mystery of Golgotha, after a long and mournful period of abandonment. People first recognized the bitterness of death when meadows that allowed humans to see the elemental life forces no longer sprouted on the earth, when the earth itself seemed to offer only the forms of death, the death with which Balder had united. And then by placing this death, whose bitterness they had only just learned on Good Friday, by experiencing it on Good Friday, Easter Saturday, all the way through to Easter Sunday, people then sensed that this death concealed the victorious power of life, which entered through the mystery of Golgotha and would always continue to re-enter human souls during these days of sorrowful celebration, in which, according to Angelus Silesius, both the death and rebirth of Christ are to be celebrated. understanding of the power of Christ's death and sacrifice was infinitely more living during the periods of time when it was connected with the deceased Baldur. Once in the realm of the Aesir, Baldur enlivened the elemental beings through his power. He looked down upon earth from Breidablik, that was the name of Baldur's mountain, like the silver sunlight reflected off the moon. He went down into the dark depths on Good Friday, Easter Saturday, and the eve of Resurrection Sunday. One looked down into Baldur's new realm of death, but with the knowledge that down there in the realm of death was a seed that connects with the earth's evolutionary impulses and will bring about new life when it arises. This is the death that is felt in the power of the seed, moldering in the depths of the earth, which brings forth new plants. The new tidings came as powerful words of God to those who had learned to comprehend death through the fate of their god Baldur. For 3 days they could perceive the effects of the power that had killed Baldur, the power that even Baldur could not defeat. This is why the sensibility that animates our soul during the silence surrounding us on these 3 days is altogether unique. It is and must be unique, because we must, for the sake of humanity's ongoing development, feel that death is taking hold in Earth evolution ever more intensely, that the once paradisiacal natural world must become ever darker and more deathly quiet around us, that the ever-victorious forces of life are maturing toward an ultimate death of being itself. This is how we look upon these 3 days, down below, in an abysmal realm filled only with death. Christ is stirring. We follow him there because we know that some piece of our own being extends into this abyss of earthly existence. And because we know that we will elevate this part of ourselves only by connecting through the power that entered with the mystery of Golgotha, with what would otherwise be purely death within us. Thus we descend into the depths and know that we must differentiate feelings and sense from one another, that we do no good if we do not consciously appoint these distinct feelings to certain days. We should rather learn that these are the days in which the soul must connect with what it can learn about death, about the death that made it necessary, the death that brought with it the need for Christ to descend down to it. Tomorrow we will look at the mystery of Golgotha from another side. But as I said, many paths lead to the summit where the deep meaning of the mystery of Golgotha will gradually become more understandable for us. This can happen only when we consider not only the victorious Christ, the solely victorious Christ, but also when we consider the Christ who is connected with death. And what death means for the whole of human life will perhaps become a little more clear if we immerse ourselves in the feelings and senses that one can have about the myth of Baldur, about what became of Baldur, the living power of the sun that affected all of the elemental world after he had died. If you animate this feeling in your soul, this feeling connected with Baldur's downfall, by saying, quote, "Just imagine how we would feel in a future world in which we remember that once there were gods who allowed us to see the surrounding world in a colorful collection of sensations. Now everything has just gone gray." Close quote. The fact that this is not our future, and it would have been if Christ had not come into the world, has been brought about by the victorious power of Christ. That which people do not yet believe, they one day will, that the Christ power, which currently can affect only the human heart itself, will one day have an effect throughout all the cosmos, specifically in the earthly portion of the cosmos, insofar as it offers rejuvenating, enlivening power to the human being. Today we will also call before our souls the sense of how justified it is in encountering such a feeling that brings the human soul together with the cosmic Christ, to consider what the Gospels mean about Christ's cosmic power, what they say when they want to show that Christ is a universal cosmic power who commands the winds and waves. The peoples of the 8th and 9th centuries felt a great deal precisely in conjunction with this glimpse of the Christ who would control the winds and the waves. They said, quote, Balder was in fact the one who made it so that we could truly and magnificently see the elemental world that worked and wove around us. But when we take up Christ and the power of our soul, Christ has the power to reawaken what was lost in Balder's death. Just as Balder appeared in the wind and the waves, so too does Christ appear in the wind and the waves. It is not an abstract soul power. It is a power that works upon the winds and the waves. Close quote. And you may also be able to hear echoes of something else if you listen carefully to the Gospel text, the Heliant. This is another poem from the 19th century, in addition to the one by Ottfried, in which the feeling is strong, even if it is unspoken, that indeed Balder once lived in the natural world. To be sure, the poet of the Heliant has long since discounted Balder. He also was not interested to bring this idea to his people through abstract understanding. The idea of Balder should have long since rotted away, but in his use of words he becomes particularly heartfelt when he is able to show how the power of Christ moves through nature, through the winds and the waves. It is as though one cannot help but become aware, even if not fully, quote, yes, the power that is greater than Baldur's power, the power that entered through the mystery of Golgotha, has affected the winds and the waves. And this is what you feel in the words with which he tells of the scene in which Christ stills the winds and the waves of the ocean in the Gospel. The scene makes a strong impression on him, particularly in the way the poet wants to direct the soul in his mysterious fashion toward what it can feel in the activity of the natural world, in the way that this natural world is filled by the divine through Christ. The poet chooses particular words in which Christ's greatness can be strongly felt in the soul, words through which the holy singular power of Christ can speak to the soul. Quote, because the people saw how Christ directed the winds and the waves of the ocean, close quote, here the Heliant expresses in a particularly heartfelt manner what the people felt toward this power of Christ, this Christ being, this individual Christ who entered through the mystery of Golgotha. Continue, quote, the people began to wonder among themselves, and several of them spoke with these words, subquote, what a powerful man he is, to whom the wind and the waves pay heed, close subquote. Continue, quote. Both of them listened to his message. There the child of God, close quote, which is to say humanity, continue, quote, the child of God was protected from danger by it. The ship sailed on. The young men, the people came to land and said, God be praised, and told of his great power. Close quote. Thus writes the poet of the Heliant in one of the first proclamations about the greatness of Christ, which lies symbolically today in the depths of death. And back then it sounded like this, from the Heliant, chapter 8, perhaps 30 to 38. Again, readers aside, my apologies, I simply cannot read this, so I'm just going to skip it. All right, end of readers aside. Steiner again. So the people who came to land proclaimed God's great power. End of Lecture 10.